Well, I could say, can you start at 2:30?
I'll be about 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, we could start at 2:30. You know, we can pick anything we want.
Yeah.
Do you do these small classes?
Yeah. Everyone seems to be free sort of from now on, and the meal was the reason for not having it. You know, you weren't even here, right? But okay, so sort of 2:35.
Yeah, around there is fine.
Okay, yeah. Why don't we say 2:35? Does that mean you have to run over?
No, I'm just about to. I'm just about to get here.
Okay.
Just got to talk to somebody.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll start when you arrive.
Okay. That'll
work. Okay. So we're doing differential forms. And there are three objects: the wedge product, the exterior derivative,
that's a bold 50, right?
Yeah. And the Hodge dual or the star. And we're working our way through that list. Last time we talked about the wedge product. Let's do a little more with that. I've thought of a couple more examples. I put another problem on the web. You may have questions about the problems I did give you.
Is it on the Hidden Crumbs
thing? Yes, it went up this morning.
Oh, okay.
So it's now functional.
Okay.
And
what's our number?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Does anybody care what the number is? 5,500. And let's see. So Carolee. Oh, but I need to tell you. It's not on my computer upstairs. The course number is what you need, right?
Yeah. This is Thomas. He might be joining us.
Cool. He's late.
It looks like he might not join us until Friday.
That sounds like
Lacker.
Okay. The course number. I've got it up in my office, and Carolee knows it. You know Carolee in the physics office?
No.
Her office is sort of, you know, not in the front, but, you know, back a couple of doors. But she knows everything. If you have any questions about anything, ask Carolee. Hung up on problem 7? Carolee,
yeah.
anything administrative, she's the one to ask. Let's see. We're not waiting for Thomas, right? He's not coming today. Okay, so I won't run up and get it right now. But I do have a course number. Carolee listed it as 3,500 and 5,500. Take your pick. Because those you can sign up for 1 to 3 credits. So you can sign up for exactly the number of credits you want. If you want a higher numbered course for any reason, you could sign up for special topics and, you know, you could call it you know, gravitational gauge theory or general relativity 7 or, you know, anything that seems to suit, or unified gauge theory. That's kind of how I think of the presentation I'm going to give you guys this term, for reasons I'll explain later. There are some differences between gravitational symmetries and gauging what are called internal symmetries. And in the way we're going to do it, those differences do not arise except as it simply depends on what group you've chosen for a quotient group, to take the quotient. We'll get there. And then you'll see that the difference is a very simple thing. Let's get the tools and just forge ahead. So, does anybody, is 5,500, certainly this is a graduate level course, so sign up for the 5,500 unless there's some reason not to. You guys are, go get it. Go get it. But Yeah, as many credits as you want to whichever level you want to sign up for. But what I mean is you'll all be doing enough work in this to earn credit for 5,500, so might as well. Any questions on any of that other than the class number, which I can't tell you right now? Okay. So the wedge product, combinatorics, right? You guys were wrestling. Did everybody get the, was it the first problem, the dimension of lambda p, the space of p formed in n dimensions? Everybody get that? Everybody know how to argue it? I'll show you a short argument for it. Did you get it? Do you want to think about it more, anybody?
I got it.
You've got it. Okay. So let me just quickly make the argument for you. You're looking for things that, all right, that's a bold P, X, and then we need to choose P indices here. The X, I, 2, up to D, X, I, P. All right, that's a typical basis element for any choice of I1 through IP. So the question is, how many such independent objects are there? So how many of these are independent? So first, choose any p different numbers lying between 1 and n. Okay, so you have to choose exactly p of these. They all have to be different, you know, they all have to be different. So how many ways are there to do that? Well, there are n ways that you can make the first choice. So let's just choose them one at a time. There are n ways to make the first choice. There's your first choice. And then for your second choice, you can choose any one you haven't chosen. So now there are n minus 1 choices for the second of these p numbers. And n minus 2 possibilities for the third, and so on, down to n minus p plus 1. Why that? Because, okay, there are p choices here. Count those terms, there are p. You're running from 0 to p minus 1, essentially. So that's p different things. And you can write this as n factorial over n minus p factorial. Okay, that gives you p different digits. So it gives you one of these, but you don't care about the order of them, right? I mean, you could choose, you know, for a 3 form, you could choose 1, 2, 3, or 2, 1, 3, or 2, 3, 1. You know, so far, you've counted all of those as if they were different. So, divide by the number of orderings of the chosen P, not the chosen people, the chosen P. How many ways are there to order P things? Well, you have P choices for the first, P minus 1 for the second, P minus 2 for the third. So that number is P factorial. So that means the dimension is this number divided by p factorial, and that's n choose p. That's the combinatoric vector n p. Everybody see how we got all of that? I assume that's what y'all got. It was looking that way when we counted.
And you get the n factorial over n minus p factorial.
We lifted it out.
Yeah, we lifted it out, that lower one.
Oh, it's the same. It's Yeah, and there are other ways you can reason to this. I mean, you know, there are lots of ways to think of counting, but this is pretty direct and easy to follow. Then I asked you to find the dimension of the full space of forms. So lambda 0, lambda 1, you know, the direct product of all of these. This is just a Cartesian product, really. Up to lambda n. And now we see that that has to be the sum, t equals 0 to n, of n to t. And so you feel you got it?
I had a product. I had that, but I thought we were supposed to solve it. I was trying to solve through and get it.
Yeah, we're not done yet.
And I couldn't get that far, but I got that.
Okay, so we want to compute what number that is. The trick is to use the binomial theorem. Right? Anybody know a formula for a plus b to the n? You can write this as the sum, k equals 0 to n, of n choose k, a to the k, b to the n minus k. This gives it to you right away.
Is that the binomial?
That's the binomial expansion, yeah. Yeah, let's label it. There's an easier way. This holds for any A and any B. Choose convenient numbers for A and B. Anybody see it?
1 and 1.
Bingo.
2 to the...
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, 1 plus 1 to the n. That's more commonly known as 2 to the n. This is the sum, k equals 0 to n. N choose k, 1 to the k, 1 to the n minus k. All of that's just 1, and you've got what you need. So, dirty little trick. You know, otherwise you've got to struggle a bit, or, you know, fuss with a lot of factorials. There are other ways to do it, but nothing quite so neat as that. Of course, proving that formula might be a nifty exercise. How do you prove the binomial formula?
But I don't remember how.
You know, the thing that jumps to mind is to let A be 1 and B be, or let B be 1 and A be X, and maybe do the Taylor series. You know, find the Taylor coefficient. Because then just give a power series and take a derivative if you can find the coefficient. Something like that. But I don't know. Maybe there's some other way, too. Let's see. Now, I wanted you to... let's see. What other problems did I give you? I shouldn't work all your problems for you. Get them before I erase them. I put another problem up. I just thought of... what would be like a fifth problem? It seems to me there were four problems, three of which we talked about last time. What was the other one?
You wanted to prove the formula, was it minus 1 to the pk?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me do an example of that. I won't prove the whole theorem for you, but let me just do an example.
It makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, let's see. Let's let omega, this is a bold omega, be, let's Well, any function you like, times dx1 wedge dx2 wedge dx6. And if let eta be, well, let's just let it be dx5. Some multiple is dx5. Then omega wedge eta is, of course, we're going to get fg. So omega first, so we need dx1 wedge dx2 wedge dx6. And now we wedge here dx5. And you can see why I'm failing to make all my d's bold here. But just imagine bold. Now, what we want to do is reverse the order, so we have to get this dx5 through here. So, you can do it one at a time. Dx1 wedge dx2 wedge minus dx5 wedge dx6. Interchanging those, we get a minus sign. That's just a multiple that comes out front. So we have minus fg dx1 dx2 dx5 dx6. Now we do another one. We're going to interchange these two. We get another minus sign. So we're going to have plus fg dx1 wedge dx5 wedge dx2 wedge dx6. And now we're going to do one more to get the dx5 to the front, and you see we have minus fg dx5 wedge dx1 wedge dx2 wedge dx3. And now we group that as g dx5 wedge f times x1 dx2 dx3. That's 6 dx6. And that's just minus eta wedge omega. Okay, so if you try it in general where you've got t of these and q of those, it's not hard to reason through what happens. Just move them through one at a time and count how many things move past other things.
The odd permutations are minus 1, even or 1.
Sorry, what?
It can mind, odd permutations give you a minus 1, and even give you a positive 1.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's pretty immediate. Once you see what rearrangement you're doing, the counting just, it'll pop out pretty quickly at you. So, there's that. Anybody have any further question on that problem? Jay?
Well, it's not much of a question, but it's, what is the actual wedge product doing, per se? Like, we use it only as dx's.
It's anti-symmetrizing.
It's anti-symmetrizing, that's all it's doing?
Yeah. The, I should tell you what these things are. Differential forms are the things that go under integral signs. And the wedge product is keeping track of the orientation of the integral. So you're integrating over oriented volume. And when you interchange, you know, you go dy, dx, you can integrate dx and dy, and you're integrating a surface with an outward normal. If you integrate dy and then dx, that's counted as integrating with an inward normal. So all you're doing is keeping track of the orientation of the surface. The fact that you're anti-symmetrizing things gives the orthogonal part. So if you're, you know, if you're in some sort of oblique coordinate system, you know, you want an area that's the area of that parallelogram, then anti-symmetrizing gets you the perpendicular part. It's like a cross product, right? Gives you the part of this vector perpendicular to that vector. This is a generalization of the cross product, and that's the fourth problem that I've put for you online, is to write this out in three dimensions. Write the wedge product of two one forms in three dimensions. So, you know, you can explicitly write them out. Now, how do you write forms? The way to write, I haven't written a general one. know, a P form. All right, in general, you can write it like this. Use indices, and you can name the indices any way you want, but if you're working in general dimensions, you've got some function out front here, and usually what I do, the form itself is bold, but the functional coefficient is not bold, but it's the same letter. And then it's got P indices on it. I2, I3, up to IP. Each of those ranges from 1 to n, and then we have the xi1 sum from 1 to n, which the xi2, which the xi3, and so on up to the xip. And in general, I like to define my p-forms with a 1 over p factorial. This is a totally anti-symmetric object. All right, under interchange of any of those indices, I introduce a minus sign. Because if I didn't, it would cancel out anyway, because this is, we saw last term how, you know, contracting two tensors, if one of them is anti-symmetric, it imposes anti-symmetry on the other. And remember the simple problem where an anti-symmetric matrix with a symmetric matrix gives zero.
Well, that's
yeah, right. Remember it all too well. Okay. So a contraction will impose the symmetry of those p indices on those p indices. So you might as well take these coefficients just ab initio to be anti-symmetric, totally anti-symmetric objects. Nathan, question?
No.
Good. Okay. Alright, so this is the way to write a p-form in general. The reason you have this is because, you know, you're going to have an omega 1, 2, 3 up to p, but you're also going to have omega p 1, 2 up to p minus 1. You're going to have p different permutations of the same thing. And each of these sums runs from 1 to p, you're getting the same coefficient p factorial different times. So if you divide by p factorial, then essentially you've got that function just once in each term. You know, it could do rearrangement. So let's do some examples. Let's let n equal 3. Then a zero form, always just some function, could be a function of many variables or one, you know, it's probably some space here. One form, okay, so we've got omega is, let's use this form, we've got 1 over, well, it's a 1 form, so we get a 1 factorial, which is boring. Then we've got just one component here, the xi, and what is that? Okay, that's just 1, so we get omega 1 dx plus omega 2 dy plus omega 3 dz. There's our one form. Look, the coefficients of that look a whole lot like a covariant vector. The coefficients of that are a covariant vector. Alright, you know, this is what you might write as omega sub I, right? And it's going to give us a more convenient way to work with those, because it turns out, I mentioned this last term in general relativity, but anti-symmetrizing, turns out that gives you the geometric information in vectors and tensors and stuff. A whole lot of it comes out by anti-symmetrizing, just like the cross product gives you perpendicular projection. Anti-symmetrizing here gets out the essential information about areas and volumes and so on. And so it turns out to be a very good way to work with these vectors. Well, let's keep going. form. I had a general two form in three dimensions. It's going to be omega ij, 1 over 2 factorial, dxi, which dx. Check. Okay, so how many terms are we going to get here? Right, we're going to have a half, and then, well, let's just do everything, see what happens. Omega, we can have one, can't have two ones, got to have like a 1, 2, dx1 wedge dx2, omega 1, 3, dx1 wedge dx3. All right, that's all we can do with a 1 in the first position, because a 1 gives 0, dx1 wedge dx1 is 0. The thing's anti-symmetric anyway. Then, so we can go up to 2 here, then we can have 2, 1, dx2 wedge dx1, plus omega 2, 2 is 0, so we go to 2, 3, dx2 wedge dx3. Now we're up to 3, so we have omega 3, 1, dx3 wedge dx1, and omega 3, 2, dx3 wedge dx2. And those are the only ones that are non-zero. So there are six terms. But we said that omega is anti-symmetric, and we know that the wedge product is anti-symmetric. So what I claim is that these two are in fact identical. Interchanging the indices on omega, because it's an anti-symmetric tensor, gives us a minus sign. Interchanging those basis forms is minus dx1 wedge dx2, so we get two minus signs. Between the coefficient and the forms, we get two minus signs that cancel, so we just get two of those. So it's just it's going to cancel this half, and we have omega 1, 2 dx1 wedge dx2. Then let's go to 2, 3. There's a 2, 3. Here's a 3, 2. And I claim that those two are also identical, so they cancel the two. This is the reason for the p factorial. All right, so we're going to get this one factor of omega 2, 3, dx2 wedge dx3. And then finally, omega 3, 1. These two are identical. We get a half times 2 times omega 3, 1. dx3 wedge dx1. Those are the components of an anti-symmetric matrix. Omega is, it's really a second rank anti-symmetric covariant tensor. Diagonal zero. Row 1, column 2 is omega 1, 2. Row 2, column 1 minus omega 1, 2. Let's see. We might want to keep the half on this. And I'll read off the coefficients from here. And there is a half. Then here, row 1, column 3 is minus this thing, minus omega 3, 1. And omega 3, 1 goes down here. Row 3, column 1. Then here, row 2, column 3 is omega 2, 3. And down here we have minus omega 2, 3, which is the same as omega 3, 2. Okay, so it's an anti-symmetric matrix. Covariant form, indices down. When we were writing, what did we write? You can write this with a Levi-Civita tensor. You remember the Levi-Civita tensor? Yeah.
Ugly, 1 minus 1, 1.
Yeah, if you use epsilon ijk, you can actually relate this to a vector, right? If I define, let me do it B with proper index position, let's put them all up, IJK, and put omega JK. It's anti-symmetric. We're not losing any information. Let's define a vector to be given by that. Well, what is the vector? What are the components of that vector? Well, V1, I is 1, so J and K have to be 2, 3, or 3, 2. If it's 2, 3, we get omega 2, 3. If it's 3, 2, we get a minus that, but then the epsilon, let me do it in two steps. We have epsilon 1, 2, 3, omega 2, 3, plus omega, epsilon 1, 3, 2, omega 3, 2. That's the first component of the vector, right? This is plus 1, this is omega 2, 3. This is minus 1, this is minus omega 2, 3. And then there's this overall half out here. So this first component is just going to be omega 2, 3. Let's see here. Then the next one we get 2, 3, 1, omega 3, 1, plus epsilon 2, 1, 3, omega 1, 3. And, this one's obviously going to be, 3, 1, 2. We'll get omega 1, 2 times 2. I won't write it all out. So this boils down to omega 2, 3, omega 3, 1, omega 1, 2. Once we cancel the half, because each term gives the same. Everybody with me?
Could you go back to where you put it in the matrix real quick?
Yeah. Look here.
Mm-hmm.
Row 1, column 2. Row 1, column 3. Row 2, column 1.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Read it right off.
Okay.
Okay, so there's actually a way to make a vector out of an anti-symmetric matrix in three dimensions. It only works in three dimensions. But we're going to see a generalization of this to higher dimensions. That's what the Hodge dual does. This V is the Hodge dual of that two form. Or if I lower an index, there's a one form that is the Hodge dual of this two form. Right? And you can relate P forms to N minus P forms. That'll be what the Hodge dual does. So I'm getting ahead of the story. But you can see it nicely here where we're only in three dimensions. So what I want you to do is everything possible in three dimensions. I guess we've always finished writing the P forms in three dimensions. I might as well do the last one here for you. So there is a three form, or there's one for each function, in fact. I can let omega equal omega ijk 1 over 3 factorial dxi wedge dxj wedge dxk. But this simplifies a great deal, because those three all have to be different. This is 1 over 3 factorial times, we have omega 1, 2, 3, dx1 wedge dx2 wedge dx3. And then we've got every permutation of that. How many permutations are there? Even permutations by Michaelis. Yeah, and that is killed by the 3 factorial. There are 6 permutations, and we end up with... Do I need to write into the... You want to see them all? So even permutations, 3, 1, 2, dx, 3 wedge, dx, 1 wedge, dx, 2. Then odd permutations, 2, 1, 3, dx, 2, dx, 1, dx, 3. I'm still adding. Because the wedge takes care of the anti-symmetrization. Then cycle those, I get 1, 3, 2.
And finally, 3, 2, 1, X3, wedge D, X2, wedge D, X1. And since omega is anti-symmetric, all right, each time you flip an adjacent pair of indices on the omega, you pick up a minus sign. When you flip the corresponding form coefficient, you get a minus sign. So you can make every one of these look like the first one. Anybody want to see an example, or you all got it? An example? Yes? No? I don't see heads moving at all. Let me do this one. Let's see. Let me write the answer and then do one. So this becomes a single function, omega 1, 2, 3, dx 1 wedge dx 2 wedge dx 3. Okay. For example, 3, 1, 2 dx 3 wedge dx 1 wedge dx 2 is equal to minus omega 1, 3, 2. Omega is anti-symmetric under any interchange. And then let me interchange the corresponding pair here. Minus dx 1 wedge dx 3 wedge dx 2. I've done one interchange here. Then I'll cancel those signs. So I have 1, 3, 2, dx, 1, wedge, dx, 3, wedge, dx, 2, because this is all associative. And now I want to flip the 2, 3, so I get minus omega 1, 2, 3. And here, I want to interchange those two, so I get dx, 1, wedge, minus dx, 2, wedge, dx, 3, which is omega 1, 2, 3. dx1, dx2, dx3. And you can do that with every term. So it just follows through. Remember, we talked last time about in n dimensions, there is exactly one totally anti-symmetric rank n tensor up to an overall factor. Once you know one component of a totally anti-symmetric rank n tensor, you know all the components, because you can rearrange in every possible order. You know, there's only enough freedom for that one function right there. You know that one function, and you know all of these. So every free form in three dimensions can be written as omega is some function times dx1 wedge dx2 wedge dx3. And that holds in n dimensions for an n form as well. There's only one n form in n dimensions. So the other exercise I'm asking you to do, let omega eta be one form in three dimensions. Show that the components or the coefficients, either way, components of omega wedge eta are the same three functions as the components of the cross product as the covariant
component of the cross product of the corresponding vector. We saw over here that a one form looks like a vector, looks like a covariant vector. Well, if you've got two one forms, we know there's a thing called the cross product of those two, and it has certain, you know, anti-symmetrized sets of components. Well, when you wedge together two one forms, you get exactly those three things. Okay, there's another one. Let tau be a two form in 3D. Find tau wedge omega and tau wedge omega wedge eta. Just explicitly write it out. Just practice with these things. Get a sense for how they work. Fuck with them. You know, write everything you can think of using the wedge product. Get familiar with it.
It's two forms in three dimensions.
What's that?
In both the two forms in three dimensions. That's bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the answer to part two there?
Zero.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Check it.
I was a little worried. I was like, wait.
No. Yeah. You're right. Second example. This will be exercise 5. I haven't put it up yet. This is floor. That is online. So exercise 5, part 2. The answer is trivial. But write it out and see how it happens. You know, check that really happens. You'll see it immediately, of course, but. Just to play. Okay. Any questions on the wedge product? Ready to move on? Exterior differentiation. By the way, I have some notes on differential forms that I will put up shortly. I'm not sure how far I got with them. I know I wrote up a bunch, but I don't remember whether I finished it or not. But I'll put those up, and they'll have a lot of this already written out. I probably took the time to figure out a formal definition of all this stuff. So that I hope that's in those notes. I forget. We'll see. How do we do this? Let's define what it is on a zero form. It's an ordinary derivative with the corresponding basis form. Like that. Come on up. Okay, so clearly the coefficient functions are what familiar object from vector calculus? What do you call it? It's different. Well, yeah, that would be the ordinary differential of functions, certainly. And what's the name of those coefficients?
Covariant vectors.
Like,
no, it's easier than that.
It is a covariant vector, but
it's the delta thing.
Like, yeah, that what? Yeah. What's that triangle thing called?
Gradient.
Yeah, it's the gradient of that.
My brain couldn't say the name of it, but I'm like, I know what it is. It's not going.
It's a covariant form of that. So what we really have is grad f has components equal to
You need a metric, right, to make it a vector.
So the ith component of the gradient is, probably speaking, this thing with the index raised. So actually, it's more natural as a differential. A differential is a more natural form of the gradient. You don't have to start with a metric. But there's a simple relationship between them. To relate the familiar forms from vector calculus using the del operator, you all often have to raise the indices, because everything here is covariant, and those formulas are all contravariant vector formulas. So you'll need to remember to raise indices to compare the two forms. And one of the things that I'm going to want you to do as soon as we finish defining the exterior derivative is, if I can restrain myself from doing so for you here, is to write the one set of things in terms of the other. Yeah, we'll do some, you'll do some, or something like that. We'll see what happens. I've got to dream up some exercises for you, because you need practice. So, okay, this defines the exterior derivative of a zero form. Then we define the exterior derivative of a p-form is equal to the exterior derivative of the coefficient function wedged with the original basis. So it's clear then that D is a map that takes lambda t to lambda into lambda t plus 1. It takes t forms to t plus 1 forms. And I think this is sufficient. This derivative is the ordinary partial derivative. You take a derivative with respect to xi holding all the other x's constant. So you know how to do those. That derivative is linear and likeness. Those are the essential algebraic properties of a derivation. Yeah, one.
Do you have to put a few plus one over here?
This is a one form. Okay. The thing in parentheses okay. Is a one form. So we can write it out. Okay, so. Let's look at it in a little more detail. What does this really mean? D of omega is going to be the partial derivative of the coefficient function with respect to x, let's say j, then dxj wedge dx I1 dx I2 up to dx I p. So you see, you get a p plus 1 form out of the p form. Okay? Yes?
They get p plus 1 and then p coefficients, right?
P plus 1 coefficients. The j in the denominator. Is an additional covariant index. So sometimes we'll write this more simply as omega I1, I2, IP, comma, J.
There we go.
Right. And you might as well think of it as anti-symmetrized, because this is going to enforce anti-symmetry on it. Right. So this is what that coefficient amounts to.
Oh, Cool.
So, what vector calculus quantity does D look most like? Well, of course, here it looks like the gradient, but it looks like another one now. What if we apply to a one form? What are we going to get? Can you see it? Yeah. What's D of a one form?
Three dimensions?
Yeah, we can do three dimensions. Everybody write it down. What is it? Take D of a three-dimensional one form. Yeah, there's the formula. Yeah, just restrict P to be one. So you just have these first two terms.
Go ahead. Tell me when you got it.
About it is that it's a matrix, right? You're getting a two-form here. And this is the only reason you're not saying, oh, well, it's the curl, because it's not quite the curl. It's a matrix, an anti-symmetric matrix whose components are the same as the components of the curl. So let's check. D of a one-form... So we get D omega is going to be the partial derivative of omega I dxj wedge our original dxi. Okay, everybody happy with that? Well, the anti-symmetry here imposes anti-symmetry there. I can write this as... omega I comma j. Let me write this several ways just so you see it several ways. What's j? Wedge dx I. Alright, that's the same as if I anti-symmetrize here. Okay. Okay, remember that bracket has a half in it. Okay? You remember the anti-symmetrization bracket. So, use the anti-symmetry of these two to impose anti-symmetry on that. So it's maybe some renaming of indices or something. You write this as a half the anti-symmetric this minus the other order. You rename indices. You rename indices, and you'll find you get this. So, all right. Well, you know what are those? Let's look at the cross product. All right, the in Cartesian coordinates, because then it doesn't matter whether we use up or down indices, right? The metric is the Kronecker delta, so up and down indices are the same thing. But if we've got a vector v with components vi, then, well, let me do it this way. We get d of v1 with respect to y, or x2, let me use x2 for y, minus d v2 with respect to x1, right? That's going to be the D component, then let me cycle D V2 with respect to X3 minus D V3 with respect to X2. Let's see, that's going to be the I component, and D V3 with respect to X1 minus D V1 with respect to X3 is the J component. So these components, if I lower the index on V, you know, this is V1 comma 2 minus V2 comma 1. This is V2 comma 3 minus V3 comma 2. This is V3, if I lower an index, I mean, 1 minus V1 comma 3. So, and those are the same things we've got here, up to that factor of a half. That's just an overall normalization, so make it part of the definition. But to all intents and purposes, D of a one form gives us the same set of functions to work with as the curl of a three vector. Only, there's nothing about what I've written here that restricts me to three dimensions. Yeah, other than that, I said three dimensions here, but I put an N here and the derivation is still the same. Okay. So I've generalized the cross product to higher dimensions. And we'll find it has a lot of the properties of the cross product in three dimensions. Not quite as simple an object. And the reason is that Hodge dual. I know how to turn a two-form into a one-form. So with the Hodge dual, I can make this into a vector. Then it is the curl. If I raise the index right, you know, it gives me literally the curl. In higher dimensions, there is not a rank 3 anti-symmetric tensor like the Levi-Civita tensor. It's rank 4 or rank n. And so the dual of this, the Hodge dual of this, is not a vector. It's some other kind of object. But it's the right geometrical thing to think about. So this is the right generalization of the cross product. Let's see. We should be able to do a whole bunch of stuff with D. Let's see. Probably. Yeah, let me leave the exercise up. You know, I'm thinking, while the exercises are still easy, I should give them to you guys as problems. You know, I'll do as many of these as you want to see, but you should try these things. Maybe you know how to work with these things, one. But this is a good practice. So we've looked at D of a zero form. We've looked at D of a one form. D of a two-form, I want you to explore D of a two-form and D of a three-form. Let me give some tips, though. What you get when you take D of a two-form and D of a three-form. Now, write it out. Now, it...
3-7, actually.
What's that?
It'd be 7.
Yeah.
Oh. I thought
you
meant 7
dimensions. That's right. D of a
7-form. Yeah. What's D of a 7-form? Quick.
Take 4 zeros. Here's 3 dimensions.
Make up your mind. We're in 7 dimensions, what's D of a 7 form?
1. 0.
What does it map?
Map
P to P plus 1.
So
D of an N form in N dimensions is?
0.
Because it takes you to n plus 1 forms. There are no n plus 1 forms in n dimensions. It's 0. You would be wedging something twice. So you know the answer to that. But, you know, write it down and see. In particular, consider here's an interestingly simple. It's actually a general tree form. I want you to consider D of a two form when the two form is the dual of a one form. So let me just write for now what that is. Let's take some coefficients. What should I call them? Let's see where these indices are going to be. Let's call it V sub I, epsilon I, J, K, VX, J, wedge, D, X, K. Might be nice to have a two-factorial there. I'm not sure. Probably will make it simpler. Here is a particular two-form that has been constructed from a vector. A vector is equivalent to a one-form. This happens to be the dual of that corresponding one-form, but we'll define dual carefully next time. So find D of omega. In that case, in particular, and interpret what you get. Figure out what it is. It ought to be very closely related to a familiar object. Now, again, something that we'll make explicit as we go on. Now, let's see. What? Yeah.
Something tells me it might be the divergent. Like, it just seems like it has all the properties to be.
Well, it's got to be a three-form, so there's only one function.
Right.
It's linear in the derivative. It's tensorial. The only such thing is the divergence.
You're
right.
I was going
through,
right. It seemed like it had all
the properties. It has to be that just from tensorial properties. Okay? So, prove it. It's just a few lines to write that. Yeah, but you're right. Okay, so grad, div, curl, No, we're seeing them all show up here. This ought to start feeling like it's an n-dimensional generalization of familiar vector calculus. Let's prove the Poincaré lemma. Let's see, I'm up to here, I guess. Can I erase here? One? What's the Poincaré lemma? Anybody have any idea what d squared is going to do?
Okay.
Yes?
Well, the answer is because that's what looks like del squared.
There's a guess. Any other guesses? Okay, no other guesses? Laplacian. One of. Let's work it out. Let omega be any t form. where I include any p, d omega. Right, this is the partial of the j here of omega I1 I2 through IP dxj wedge dxi1 wedge dxi2 dxip. So there's the exterior derivative of W, where I can write this as I1, I2 through IP, comma, J, anti-symmetrized. Everybody comfortable with the notation on that? Okay. D squared. I can write this with or without the brackets. Down here I want to write it without the brackets because I've got another anti-symmetrization to do anyway. We're going to have dk of omega I1 through IP, comma, j, dxk wedge dxj wedge dxi1 through dxip. And that is equal to omega I1 through IP, comma, J and K, two derivatives here, and then the DXs. And of course, that's equivalent to the same thing anti-symmetrized. Does anybody see what that's equal to? I know Juan already knows. What do you know about mixed partial derivatives? It's funny when I write it out this way.
Oh.
Let me write the coefficient.
K equals K.
You see it?
Yeah.
This is d squared omega I1 through IP, dxj dxk. Does it help if I write it that way?
What's that? It's going to be symmetric.
This is symmetric. Mixed partials are symmetric. What's dxk which dxj? Symmetry wise.
Anti-symmetric.
What problem is on your final?
Anti-symmetric, anti-symmetric, zero.
Boom. Okay, you're anti-symmetrizing something that's necessarily symmetric here. It always vanishes. D squared equals zero. Acting on any T form, the effect of D squared is zero.
Okay.
So, for example, the curl of a gradient is zero. For example, the divergence of curls is zero. Right? These familiar theorems from vector calculus all come down to the Poincaré lemma. What's that?
Exercise.
Yeah, right. Well, it will be, but before I give you, help me remember that exercise. But I need to give you the Hodge dual first. The Hodge dual lets you establish the rigorous correspondence between div, curl, grad, all those operators, and Laplace, and so on, and write them in terms of differential forms. Exactly. You need to use the metric in various ways, raise and lower indices. And you need to convert anti-symmetric matrices into vectors. So you need the Hodge dual to strictly write that as the curl. Show you how to do that. And once you can do that, then I can simply have you prove every theorem of vector calculus in 3D. They all follow immediately from the things we're seeing here. Yeah.
Okay. So if you took a zero form, wouldn't that be kind of like the Laplacian of a zero form? Because zero form would have no anisometric part of it. So.
Let's do it. I just proved it for any t-form, so let's look at the special case, make sure we didn't miss something.
Oh, I'm seeing where it's going. Okay.
But, let's do it. So d squared, a zero form is a function. So d squared of a function is d. Now, what you do with, when you've got more than one operation in an expression like this, works from the inside out. So I want to take d of df. That's d of f, comma, I, dx, I. And then now I take a derivative of that, so I get f, comma, ij, dx, j, which, dx, I. Second partial. You can write it out as neatly as we like here, as extensively as we like. But anti-symmetric, matrix, symmetric matrix.
I was just in that second. IJ. I was just doing I on my quiz.
D of F is the gradient. In order to get the Laplacian, Jake, you need the Hodge dual. If you stick a Hodge dual between those, it's no longer zero. Now it gives you something new. And we'll do that.
Hodge dual between what? The two?
Between the two D's. You do some operation between the two D's, then you can get something non-zero. The converse to the Poincaré lemma is the generalized Stokes theorem. Is that right? Is that true?
I think so.
Well, no, it's not quite that simple. But the converse to the... we figured out... Last time we did this, we figured out the best order to prove it. Do you still have notes on that? Email them to me. I want to remember which way I did it. The converse says that if D of a form is zero, then that form is D of something. And if you integrate that statement, you get the generalized Stokes theorem, which includes the fundamental theorem of calculus, Stokes' law, the divergence theorem, and higher dimensional generalizations. So, it all was a little teeny three-dimensional part of something that works everywhere. It's a very powerful formula. How are we doing? You want to go off and work exercises? Should we press on with something? How do you feel?
I'd normally say press on, but I need to look at this more carefully than I did work back to leave with.
Yeah, okay. I've given you several exercises, and make up your own. If you think of anything that you can do with D and wedge, do it. Right. Certainly anything in two or three dimensions, you can write out explicitly. Here's one. Write all the basis forms in four dimensions. Not hard. How many are there? 16. Two to the fourth. So what are the 16 basis forms in two dimensions? Well, you can sort of picture them, but, if it helps, write them out. Once we have the dual, then we can do anything. When did I do that? Did I do that last term? When did I do the generalized Stokes theorem?
It was
summer.
Yeah.
Okay. But you got it. Yeah. Great. I'd like to recall because it took me two times through to get it right. Might as well do it right the first time. Okay. So I think it's probably a good idea to break there. I'll stay and answer questions. We can work stuff out as much as you like, but. It's good to go off and compute, especially at this stage. Get down this notation. You need to work with it.
We need to start computing, I think.
So, Friday we'll meet at 2:35-ish.
Okay.
Don't knock yourself out to get over here. I'll wait till you get here.
All right. Anyway,
it'll be shortly after 2:30. It's fine.
And so the course number for this class is 5,500.
5,500, yeah. Yeah. That's, I don't know what it is, but yeah, that number lets you choose the number of credits however you want. If you try and take more than 5 credits, somebody might complain, but no. But it won't be me.
Make sure you do have work to make up for it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you all sign up for 5 credits, you'll get it. Yeah, okay. Any other questions on any of this? You're good? Okay. Great. Okay. Yeah. So go ponder. Have fun.
Kind of hammer it out on your own, more or less.
Yeah, I think you'll get more, if I've given you enough examples that you can do some of this on your own now, that's the thing to do. Make sure you understand enough, from my examples here that you can do those exercises for your mouth. And then, we can talk about them on Friday if you have questions. I'm sure you'll have some questions. Okay. What you got, Juan?
Do you want me to do exercises again?
Yes, sir.
Not sure. Oh, okay.